This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
All right, let's kick things off. Inviting our first speaker for this panel session. He is the consultant clinical psychologist, the man behind Paul J. Psychology Clinical Consultancy, Mr. Paul Jambanathan. Joining him on stage is Dr. Farah Nini Duzuki. She's the senior lecturer at the Law Faculty of University of Malaya. And of course, joining the both of them, you've heard of them, you've seen them already today. Once again, big round of applause for Meera Sivasothi and Uma Bhagan, Ambike Bhagan.
Meera's here to moderate the session. I'm here for the jokes.
Okay, let's kick this off now.
Yes.
Paul, we're going to kickstart with you. Farah does a lot of advocacy work as a lawyer when it comes to child sex abuse and legislation and all of that. So we will draw on some of her work. She will also be able to talk about, in a way, the religious perspective when it comes to reproductive health, which I think culture and religion sometimes can be a challenge when it comes to talking about these things. So, Paul, do we need a strategy when we have this conversation with our children?
Yes, you need a strategy. We shouldn't be taking it for granted because it's an extremely important topic. The strategy should primarily involve the primary environment, hopefully the leaders of the family. And in many cases, it is the father and the mother, or in cases of single parents, it's the primary parent who's in charge, custody, care, and control of the child. Yes, you need a strategy. You need to think about it carefully. You don't let it happen. You make it happen in the appropriate way.
What is appropriate?
Age development, cognitive skills, amount of information flow, role modeling, all these things go into their being appropriate for the child.
Paul, has the age that we start talking to our kids about this, has that come down? You know, they're exposed to so
Yes, much. It's become earlier that this topic needs to be addressed. See, the initial issue is when people turn around and say, Paul, when do I start telling my kids this? And I say when they begin to ask the first question. Then I realize there was a flaw in that reply because not all children would ask their parents this question because of the communication skills in the family. Not all channels are open. And kids learn from a very early age that they're not supposed to talk about it at home. And so if they come home and say, Dad, what's the meaning of a bad word? Shut up. Don't ask this question. Or if you say anything more, I'm going to saw it off. This is the famous one, isn't it?
Tape your mouth.
Tape your mouth. And so they start learning not to talk about these things at home. So it's not about when they ask first, but when you think they're going to be exposed. Now, it's getting earlier because they're exposed to so much more information on the net, on TV, with their friends. They're exposed to this at a much younger age, and so it's getting younger.
You forgot calling the police.
Calling the police.
Yeah, say that word and I'll call the police. Nobody
yeah, you say that again, I'll call the police. Or this black guy with a beard will come and get you.
It's not me.
A hantu.
I've shaved.
Okay. Farah, you want to just tell us what you do and what you're championing as far as sex and reproductive health education is concerned?
I come in when things go wrong, unfortunately. In fact, for the last 3 days, we were in this workshop drafting guidelines on the management of child sexual abuse victims. What police should do, what the judges should do, what lawyers should do, you see, how to treat the child in courts, etc. Because when things go wrong, as they often will, you need to deal with it. But I would like to tell you also about the reality of what's happening today and why this effort is so important. 2 years ago, the Ministry of Health actually give us a very scary statistics that every year between 17,000 to 18,000 of teenagers seek help at the government public clinics and hospitals related to sexual reproductive issues. And that's a very mild way of putting it because this would involve issues such as teenage pregnancies, STDs, gonorrhea, etc. And mind you, this is at the public hospitals and public clinics. Can you imagine? If Syed Azmi is here, he will tell you that there are just too many problems for us to handle at the moment. And 10 years ago, I was involved also in the drafting of a special guidelines for the management of sexual reproductive health with adolescents, you know, how to manage these cases. And in drafting that, we had actually involved the religious authorities because really, if the problem is not as acute as it is, we would not have done all this work.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought that up, because having the sex talk with kids is important, but also teaching kids from a very young age what is appropriate and inappropriate, right? As parents, we often go, yeah, go give uncle a kiss, go give uncle a hug. But uncle could be a creeper and the kid knows it and doesn't want to go give uncle, right?
Yeah.
So that's important, but we don't allow the children to make that decision.
Paul, why is it we're unable to talk to our children about sex? I mean, when we wanted to have sex, we had no problems. But why is it so difficult to talk to our children about sex?
Because of your parents. And because of the parents before that. And because this whole idea of sexual talk has become taboo.
Yeah.
When it's actually so natural, necessary. We have put a blanket on that kind of discussion. We've told children as they're watching TV and they see a romantic scene, don't look.
No, but now we censor.
No.
And then
you forget that the kids have got keyholes, you know, guys. And now they've got video cams. I know of a child who videotaped his parents having sex with a little camera. He installed it himself. He recorded it and he tried to blackmail his dad.
What did he want?
He wanted some tablets. Honestly, you need to start talking about it early. We use the wrong tools. We tell them to shut up. We say that you're going to get knocked. We're going to pluck out your teeth. The saddest thing is, each of you who tell your children, nice question, ask your daddy. It means you're telling your child, I'm stupid, ask your father. And the father says, I'm stupid, ask your mother. Because that's the implication, that you don't know enough and you don't want to talk about it. You can't talk about it.
Farah, you said judges and, you know, the legal system, everybody along the line needs to be educated.
Yes.
So there are a lot of things they don't understand?
Oh yes, because dealing with children, there's a lot of dynamics, you know, different language abilities, different developmental age.
Lifespan.
Different capacities as well, you know. Even we adults hate going to court. We get so scared going to court. What more children? And usually the one who abuse them are somebody they know. So it's really very scary. So that's why there are mechanisms such as giving evidence away from the courtroom, you know, and we need to educate the judge that you must use this, because when they were in law school, they were not trained on all this. They were just trained on how to handle the criminal justice system according to the ordinary ways. But yes, I have to support that, what Paul has said. You must start very, very early. I'm talking this from experience.
It's not just law school, medical school as well.
That's true.
They don't even know how to tell people so-and-so has passed away properly. They're addressing it now. But you'll be surprised the number of doctors who send their children to my sex camps to actually understand sex. The doctors know the anatomy, they know how to cut it open and put it back together, but they still don't know how to talk. So it doesn't profession, it transcends all professions, all ages, cultures, everything. This inability seems to be really prolific now.
So, Paul, I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, if the experts, the professionals, if they're having trouble talking about sex, what does it mean for the rest of us?
Listen to BFM.
We're not paying him for this, I swear.
They're not. No, that's when we have to realize, you see, the stats that Dr. Cho mentioned earlier, he said it was 15% or some 13%, it went up to 20%. It's come down to 12%. Well, those are the stats. He's right. Those stats are real. It's not only because of mental health services around. It's also because the private sector for these areas has blossomed. There are more clinical psychologists, counselors, all around there. As a matter of fact, all my depression cases, all my childhood misbehavior, conduct disorder cases, they run into the thousands. None of them have been reported in the stats. And it's not just me. There's so many mental health experts out there. The reason why we need to talk about it, look at the symptoms. Babies being thrown around the streets, dumped babies, children getting pregnant earlier, STDs, STIs going up big time. HIV has become such a big problem for us. There is more sex happening now than ever before. And those are the indicators that say we have to start talking about it.
But we seem to be advocating abstinence. How?
Are you asking me?
No, Farah, what
I'm
about
not
you?
I'm not advocating.
Everywhere.
I don't know.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I don't know.
Everywhere you hear the word abstinence.
Don't do it. How can you stop anyone from doing it? So you got to tell them how to do it, when to do it, why you do it, what's necessary to do it. So you cannot say don't do it. The more you say don't do it, they're going to do it. They're going to try to do it. When your parents say don't, you will.
Questions from the floor. Anyone? Yes, Said Azmi.
We have our own shelter home for pregnant girls. And they're all 14 to 16, and they're all active, and they all have sex, and they all like it, and I said, it's okay. But you're right, Paul, that inappropriate information, and that what makes it even worse. I don't think abstinence is the way, if you ask me. Simply because it's like if you say no, they will do it. If you say really, really no, they will do it under the radar. You cannot even detect. There's another problem about we don't have enough sex educators. It sounded like as if you don't need it, but actually we do, because a lot of people, even NGO, like to crop up and say, oh, we can talk about sex education, safe touch, 1 hour in your school. I'm very worried of that. Because that 1 hour, if the child do not understand what you're talking about, because you're not an expert, she will go, oh, I don't have any brothers, or they have something different called penis. I want to see. And they go inside. And we have real cases that children, because they're curious, this tutup-tutup mata, don't watch Frozen, got kissing, close eye, even though in cartoons, it's not well explained. Parents cannot explain, and we don't know where to go. Unless here, in this platform, we have something to say, read this or hear BFM, I'm fine. But even that is a problem, because the narration towards the community who doesn't read English or doesn't understand terms such as infection, then when they go down, they don't understand. So I rather show a picture of Mr. Gonorrhea, like, look at this. But that's not even appropriate. So my question is, in Malaysia, for a Malaysiana environment, because it's true. Because my problem is acceleration when it comes down to the public. Do we actually have a place where we can guide instead of saying, come to my course, 1,600 ringgit, and then you can train?
2005 lah.
Ah, there you go. Mine's cheaper then.
No, let me correct you on one issue. This is not a Malaysiana ASEAN problem. If you look at the web, you'll find that the articles on the web and all are international. I've worked in the UK, in Australia. This problem is a global problem. It's just that we don't have enough resources that are on the web for Malaysians to read. Another issue, counselors. We have counselors in most of the secondary schools now. I ran a workshop for counselors in Penang, all the schools in Penang. I gave them words that children use, bad words. Then we've got other things like armpit hair, bum, and even the word orgasm. These are all normal words. Now, I gave the counselors these words and said, stand up and explain the word you have. So one person explained the word bum, where all the sex organs are situated. Trained counselor, pubic hair, the hair in your armpit. Being trained is crucial. The ability to talk about it and talk about it openly without drawing any judgmental lines. The training is not for the kids. They are ready to hear anything. That's the problem. Not hearing it from the right source, that is the problem. Not hearing it from you, you are the problem. You've got to do the changing. Then your kids are going to reflect the kind of sex diet they're getting from you.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
Also be careful how you use the word sex. Sex is not just intercourse. There's another big term called sexuality. It's not sex education. Sex education is a two-page manual, in, out. Sexuality education, that's the big thing. The gender issue, the studies, how you realize it, how you express it, how you make it work.
Yes, that's true. But then, parents, it has to start from you. Because if you say somebody got to teach it at school, it's too late already. We have cases as young as 6 years old and 8 years old doing it, and the police don't know what to do about it. Because under the law, below 13 years old, there is an irrebuttable presumption that a boy cannot commit rape. But we have got cases almost every month. And I'm not saying they're bad. They're just experimenting. But the bigger question is, why are they trying it out? Of course, it's curiosity. But then again, that's why parents must start from very early on. You know, what are the safe touches? What are the unsafe touches? What happens? You know, and you cannot simply close your eyes anymore. You got to explain it now. And I'm talking from experience, because I have from 8 till 24, 6 of them. So, you know, it's different approaches with every child. Different with boys, different with girls. But you got to start early.
But what about this notion that if I talk about it, I will be encouraging
it?
Why would you be encouraging it? Because if you tell them about sexuality, you are telling them about why they are the way they are. Why are they different from the other sex, for example? You see, you are actually educating them. So it is not supposed to be a taboo subject. It's not supposed to be something that you shy away from. And they ought to be good enough at it that they can actually tell their friends as well in a very friendly way. And of course, you get stuff like, you know, oh, so-and-so daughters is teaching our children all that. And I'm more than happy if the parents contact me. And I'll give the clarification. True. Because of the things that I see in my work, I would rather parents learn about this earlier on, you know, because if you really want to wait until they go to school, let me tell you, teachers are not trained.
I guess training the sex educators is a very important thing. But for the people in the room, I'm assuming, I guess, let's talk about parents and how they can best broach the topic with their children. I want to know whether it's a serious conversation or a funny conversation. I guess the role of humor in maybe addressing this issue with kids, because parents feel very awkward. Let me tell you, the most awkward moment I've ever had as a human being, I was 17 years old in London with my mom, and we decided to go and watch a movie. For some reason, my mom was like, oh, look, let's go watch this movie called Basic Instinct. You've heard about it? Right. So my mom, myself, and my sister are watching this movie. Halfway through, my mom just leans over to me and goes, that's not how it's done. It was just the most awkward experience. But I think humor went a long way in actually talking about this stuff afterwards. So the coffee we were having afterwards wasn't awkward or awful.
Humor is one of the best ways to talk about sex. It is serious. The best way to do and talk about sex is opportunistically. When the time presents itself, when it's opportunistic enough for you to say, ha, this is a chance to talk about sex. So that's the way to do it. My daughter asked us one day, we were coming back from somewhere, where do babies come from? But I was prepared for this, not because I'm a psychologist, because I was a wannabe parent. I got the books, I started the reading early, and we started explaining to her. She was in no position to understand what an erection was. So she knew what sewing was and how a rigid thread can go through the eye of a needle. So we had to use various kinds of examples, and we started laughing about it, joking about it. And she remembered that at that age, at 4. Then when she was older, she started asking more questions because she was listening to more things. How did the sperm get inside your body, mummy, to meet the ovum? Did daddy actually put all that sticky stuff inside you? And she wanted to know what sperm was like. How do I show what sperm is like? So I went and broke an egg and showed her what protein is like. And this is where all the life is from the male egg. And that's how it gets into mom. And when daddy and mommy love each other so much, we get so happy, the eggs come out and go inside. Why are you laughing? Isn't that what happened? I mean, you're laughing because it's what you call embarrassed laughter.
Awkward laughter.
Awkward laughter. Come, let's talk about it.
They're laughing because their kids are in the room.
Yeah. Questions, anyone?
Hi, I know that my son, he's 18 now, and I know that he knows about sex.
How do you know?
Well, I made a mistake of using his computer.
Mistake? That's a new one.
It was a very awkward moment, so I told him, well, it looks like you've been busy. But, you know, with pornography, I told him, actually, this is not how it's done. So the question I'd like to ask you is, how do you teach or how do you guide parents on how to talk to their kids about relationships and the whys you have a relationship that leads to sex and what is a healthy relationship? The second question is, this also is my kid. I saw a box of condoms in his room. So I just like, oh, okay. And I said, no, well, who's the girl? And then he says, well, how do you know it's a girl? So I told him, son, whatever it is, no, you are one son. Now I'll have two sons. It's not, you know, not important. But how do you talk to your child about having a different kind of sexuality?
Okay, first one.
Why everyone looking at me?
I don't know about that.
That's why we invited you.
Okay. Let me address the computer thing first. There was a boy, 10-year-old boy in school, in the canteen during break time. He was shoving a stick up the rear end of a cat. So the school caught him, punished him, beat the life out of him on stage in front of everybody else. And then they finally said, you've got to see a shrink. So they brought the boy to me. And I know for a fact that monkey see, monkey do. So he saw it somewhere. When I asked him, he said he saw it on his elder brother's computer. And the brother was looking at things called bestiality. He saw it, he repeated it. Not his fault. Now these things are prolific. There is no hardware or firewall that can prevent a child from work. They are smarter than you think. And then they're sending it now on handphones. It is, do you know what your children know? One of the biggest things we used to say was the family that eats together stays together. As a child, the family that surfs together stays together. So you don't have to pry, but if you're open enough, you'll know what your children are looking at. My wife and I, occasionally when they were younger, every week we will look up the latest kind of porn that's available. Because I want to know, accidentally, what my children might know. The boy thinks shoving things up the rear end of an animal is the norm because nobody counted it. Don't forget these two words. One is called primacy. What they learn early is going to bear amazing weight on whatever they do. And of course, what happens most recently, which would be exactly what he saw because that's what he's practicing. That's important. Now, coming to the second issue, now we've got this LGBTQIAAA. It's a very important issue. I don't know where you all stand on it. I'm not interested in your religious stand on it. I'm interested purely in the human aspect of things. I am respectful of all gender preferences. All I want to know is whether you're practicing your sexual activity safely and you know the consequences of such outcomes. That's all I need to know as a clinician. So it is your particular religious cultural background that determines your norm that you're going to transmit to your child as a primer, as early as possible, not as a blackmail thing, but at least they'll know your values. So do it early.
Farah, how is it going wrong with us not addressing these issues?
Same as what they said, but of course, dorms are different. And you have got to bring in what you believe. And of course, you use that to bring up your children, isn't it? To me, number one thing that you must be is to be your children's best friend. If you make an effort towards that, they will always come back to you no matter what. And I can tell you it is not easy. It's very taxing. It's very taxing when you have an 18-year-old calling you from a different time zone and, you know, mommy, I need to talk to you. And then you were there dead sleepy at 3 a.m. in the morning. But then at the end of the day, you're grateful because he looks for you first when things go wrong, you know. And this doesn't happen overnight. You must be willing to be his or her best friend right from early on. So whatever it is that transpires in mind, he will ask you. And you must be honest, as Paul has put it, you know, got to be straightforward. It's not easy. I think for us Muslims especially, you know, a lot of things are dosa, 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 right? But then we've got to also empower them. What are the barriers? Why is it that they are said to be wrong in the first place? Because of all the consequences, make them understand. I think majority of Muslim parents like to say, you cannot do this, you cannot do that, that's it, no discussion. And then you wonder why things go wrong. Most of the children that I meet in Henry Gurney schools, you know, in all these approved schools, they are not intrinsically bad, let me tell you. Many of them, you know, have started working for their family since the age of 10 or 11 in the estates. Why? Because the mothers are single parents. It's not because of them that they are now behind in the institution. It's because girls offer themselves to them and you know, you work so hard in the daytime and during the weekends you want some leisure and pleasure and you know, it's been offered to you. And if you, you know, if you've not been told from early on that it is not right, that it can lead to dangerous and, you know, medical consequences, you will just do it without any fear or anything that stops you.
Paul, intimacy and pornography, they will not be able to tell the difference between pornography and intimacy.
The dangers is that it forms their standards. It sets their standards of intimate behavior, interactive behavior, gender responsive behavior. It's whatever they see is setting their standards. Now the problem is, who's the censorship board? The government can't censor this. No one can censor it at all. The censorship board is you, parents. But the problem with this censorship board is that the censorship board doesn't have enough time, quality time with their children. And I came up with these stats in 1990. It's only got worse now. Parents spend more time in the toilet, on the toilet bowl, in the shower, showering, shaving, on all that kind of stuff in the bathroom, more than they spend time talking with the children they love and prayed for. They even spend more time making those babies rather than spending time talking with those babies. And after a little at early stages of interaction, you abdicate your responsibilities to the maid and the tuition teachers and the schools. And then you say, I didn't bring you up like this. Well, you didn't bring them up at all. The average Malaysian father spends less than 2 minutes a day talking to his child, 1990 stats. The average Malaysian housewife spends less than 5 minutes. The average Malaysian working mother spends about 8 minutes a day. This is 1990 stats. What do you think it is like now? And those days we had very few maids. You guys are not spending enough time. Don't complain what your children do. You need to be there talking with them, being their censorship board. Who's teaching your children values? The maid. The maid sleeps with your children. The maid carries your child when the child is sick. When you go to the clinic, you are sitting reading a magazine. The maid is holding the child when you're shopping with a basket in front of you. You cannot complain about your child's sexual tendencies. You're not even watching TV with your child. You use the TV and any program, the tablet and anything he sees there as a babysitter. So you don't complain. If you want to make a difference, you better start very fundamental issues about what pornography is and how you're going to manage what information the child gets.
So a parent had called and said that just on Thursday, her son had friends coming over to play all the time, and one day she found that behind her back, her son was kissing a girl.
And he was 8.
And she felt bad calling because she said her initial reaction was to hit him.
Yeah.
And tell him don't do that. And she was very disappointed in the son. And then she called to say, is it too late? How do I change this? How can I backtrack? I know I did something wrong.
Open communication. Perhaps the first thing to say is, I don't know. And if you don't know, where can you find out? Ask. Find out together, guys. I don't know how to tell you this. I don't know how to talk about it, son. I'm really quite embarrassed, but thank you for asking. Thank you for bringing this up. This is a great opportunity for the family to do something. Ask, do you know the proper names for all the parts of the anatomy of the body?
I don't.
Little boy, little bird, birdie, lizard, all these kind of things. Words like penis, vagina, anus, these are all scientific names. Please don't punish your children for using them. Do you know enough parts of your human body? I took a family to Dal Tioman recently, and this boy saw a lot of people changing. He turned around and asked, why are your balls hanging, huh? And I was waiting for the father and mother to ask. I saw them by the beach, you know. And the mother said, hey, don't talk like that, la. People can hear. So later, they were staying in the same chalet area, so I went and asked the parents, do you know why testicles hang? And I explained why. Some of you don't know. Sperm needs to be stored at a lower temperature than the body temperature. Simple as that. And then the lifespan of a sperm, and this boy was sitting there, wow. You know, the better thing was the father and mother were sitting there, yes, sir. And I said, if sperm don't die within 24 hours, you can get pregnant anytime during your life. From one sexual episode 10 years ago. What do you know? Your knowledge, your ability to talk. This lady who called in, I'm so glad she called because she realized something. And she called, which is brilliant. Do you have a point of realization? One of the things I do for parents is I role play in my clinical setting. And you must see the number of red faces parents have, even talking to an adult, you know.
Question?
Good afternoon. What is the legal framework as far as sex education is concerned? Maybe the next question, is there in our blueprint, education blueprint or plans for the government to introduce sex education? I remember there was a bill in parliament about it. Could you enlighten us on the latest?
If you ask me about a legal framework, there is none on sexual education. In national education blueprint, there is. And to be honest, I only knew about this because I was part of this task force on child marriage. If you recall, a few years ago, there was this public uproar in respect to, you know, child marriages that have been taking place in our country. And in that task force, of course, there were representatives from the Ministry of Education, and we were told that as of 15 years ago, the Cabinet has already endorsed sexual education in school under sexual reproductive health education. You know, the name is, of course, not sex education because it's taboo. But then I had to tell her that I did a random survey among my WhatsApp group friends and to ask what is it that their children know about sexuality from school. You know, out of about 120 parents who responded, only 2 said their children knew something. And this 2 were actually from the Chinese schools where they were informed by a teacher about it. So the rest were not told of anything. I asked my daughters. One is already 22 now. The other one is 20. They also say that they didn't learn anything officially from school. What they learn is from the Kotex companies that come in to sort of teach them how to use and to prepare themselves for menstruation and all that. They actually learned that from, of course they learned it from me, but then in school, that's where they learned it. So it's one thing having it in the blueprint. It's one thing about it being done. So the next question was, you know, why is it not known to all? The thing is that the teachers don't know how to teach it. It's supposed to be there. In fact, I think 2 years ago, there was this uproar in Standard 5, Buku Kesihatan, you know, introduction of this sexuality education. But then again, Kesihatan is not examinable, you know, so it's not something that they, and it's only at year 5. So again, it's too late already.
So
you have to start as early as...
Does it start at year 5 now? So in my time, it was Form 3. There was no talk about sex until biology, Form 3.
Integrated science.
Yeah.
Yeah, during my time, it was Form 1, the sexual reproductive organs. And then, even then also, we had a male biology who told us to read it yourself. So you see, parents, please don't wait for the school, because I don't know how the system can improve on this. You know, we are trying our best, pushing it all the time. But I suppose it is right what Paul has said. It's not just in our culture. Thailand is also having a difficulty. So they have passed a new policy to actually introduce the long-term contraception for those who are sexually active in schools. I'm afraid that, you know, for those who are really sexually active, maybe we have no choice, because doctors are seeing cases who are coming to them for third abortion, for fourth abortion, you know, and they're not even 16 years old.
Let's talk about contraception. I think that's another taboo topic. How do we start that conversation about contraception?
When you talk about safe sex, when you talk about the inclination to want to explore your bodies and wanting to explore your bodies with somebody else, and when you cross the line in terms of the risk of having intercourse and of producing children or getting pregnant, then you have to start talking about contraception. Anytime you talk about intercourse, you must talk about contraception. They go hand in hand.
Sexual experimentation. We know it's happening at home. Some of us find out that our children are experimenting. How do you manage that?
I got to tell you a story. It's an old case of mine. A boy, his father died when he was young. As he grew up, he was playing with his penis. And then the little bird got ding a little bit lah. So he started playing with it. Natural, very. He's exploring his body. And that's what happened. His mother, who is a widow, caught him doing this. She beat him silly. She even beat the penis so bad and told the boy, one day dirt is going to come out. True enough, one day when he was mature enough, semen came out and it was sticky. So he started developing OCD behavior from a young age. This boy grew up to become an engineer. And there was an arranged marriage. They tried having babies for a long time and couldn't have babies. So they went to the doctors. He was checked out. His plumbing was good. Her ovaries were great, but still no babies. And they were doing it. So they were referred to me for anxiety and all that kind of stuff. And I started talking to them individually. How do you guys do it? He withdraws before he ejaculates. Why? I love my wife so much, I don't want to put dirt inside her. He was a master's in engineering, but very restricted, cocooned family, mother alone, and his primacy issue stuck with him. Till I had a doctor help me get a sperm sample and he saw his sperm moving. They have 3 kids now, but it took a long, long time, a lifetime. He could have gone on never having had children. So it's crucial to talk about experimentation. I've worked with so many adults. Many of you haven't even seen your own rectum, you know that? Use the opportunity to explore your own bodies. It is nothing wrong. It's God-given. But we find it awkward. That is so wrong. And then we punish our children for experimenting with their body. You should experiment with your body. And that brings us to a very interesting issue on self-stimulation.
Yes, my next question. Self-stimulation.
Is there a law about that one?
Yeah.
There's no law.
No law against self-stimulation. Okay, just as a Muslim, how about masturbation?
It's not allowed.
It's just a sin.
Yes, it's just a sin. So it's not really regulated.
So you won't be on the first class ticket to paradise, you'll be in third class now.
You repent.
Yeah, repent. Okay, but I'm not speaking from a religious point of view. The reason I ask that question is because religion and your cultural background, they all matter. But it is suggested in the literature, the research actually says that self-stimulation and achieving some pleasure from your body, it is good for you. Please hold this very carefully in the foreground of the background of your religion and culture. I'm not suggesting you go ahead and start practicing. But if you are doing it and if you're not doing it, be very careful how you do it and why you do it, when you do it. And even when you are married and you have a legal sexual partner, you got to know the other person's body too. That's part of sex education. If your children are going to get married, do they know the body of the opposite sex? Who's going to teach it to them? You know, there are many volunteers in town who will teach your children. They're waiting to teach your children from as young as you get. There was a maid who I helped put away in jail who was masturbating a baby who's 8 months old with a earbud because the parents were elsewhere. What are your maids doing to your children when they bathe your kids, when they feed your kids? Your kids. Your kids. Not mine. Bring them to me later when they got a problem.
That is going to keep them up at night.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
Farah, what are the obstacles in your line of work that you see parents are struggling with?
It's cultural. You know, it's the culture that's stopping them. As Paul has said, it's what your parents don't do to you, so you feel that it's wrong to do it to your kids. It's the same thing as physical punishment as well, isn't it? Most parents resort to physical punishment because they were hit as children. So, and they, you feel you turn out alright, so you just hit your... So it's a vicious cycle. So it's the same thing with talking about sexuality. But then again, you know, one thing that you can talk to your teenagers about would be the legal consequences. Like, for example, if you have sons, you must tell your son that if you ever sleep with anyone below the age of 16, you can go to jail straight away. Strict liability offense. Regardless whether the girl loves you and consented to the act, you still end up in jail. It's mandatory, you know. The law does not look into your intent. And to 66 boys whom I've spoken to, who are in Henry Gurney prison or Sekolah Tunas Bakti for this reason, only 10% of that sexual activities happen outside the home. And some of them, parents just downstairs and they're upstairs. Paul was saying, do we really know? Do we really know what our children are doing? You know, he's not just saying it. Do you really know what your children are doing? Do you really know what they are reading? Who their friends are? I mean, it's not cliche. You've got to know what your children are doing. You have to.
Tell us the legalities of touch.
You've got to tell them that, you know, nobody else can touch you apart from the people who can actually touch you, like the doctors to examine you, you know, mummy, kaka, if you have to. Because I don't agree to that, sorry. I have 6 children, but I don't actually allow my maid to handle my children's private parts, you know. That's one. And now the law is getting stricter. The definition of sexual abuse is actually very wide. Even showing indecent material to a child can amount to sex abuse. So be very, very careful. You know, the law is actually tighter now. And now in the latest law, the Sexual Offences Against Children Act also punishes child grooming. So if you come across your children's handphone and you see her chatting with somebody, last year, you cannot do anything. Starting from this year, July, you know, the police can actually take action against that person. And that's child grooming now. So child pornography is a strict offence now. So the laws are actually tighter, but you got to know about it. And you know, all these laws can be downloaded free. You just need to Google them. You can get them in PDF format. Okay. So parents, empower yourself before you can actually empower your children.
I think RMAF statistics 2015 reveal that an overwhelming 80% of child sexual predators seek their victims through mobile chat apps, and that includes WeChat, Facebook Messenger. That's a very high number. Paul, non-typically developing children, if we are having challenges speaking to our typically developing children about sex, what more the non-typically developing child? How do you manage that?
We need the environment to manage those kids, because if they have diminished or compromised cognitive skills, they aren't able to process information right from wrong. The primary environment has to have a design by which they can actually monitor this child's behavior. We have many children who have developmental disorders. They are taken advantage of in big, big ways. The other side of the coin is the body is still reaching sexual maturity. Your breasts are growing, your penis is growing, pubic hair is growing, and you will start expressing yourself purely hormonally different because you don't have enough capacity to inhibit those raw energies. Those children need to be taught how and when. There's one law in Australia for highly dysfunctional people as they get older. They're actually taught to express themselves sexually in private. Very appropriate medical ways on how they need to express their sexual energy. But that's special. It's policy driven. Now, in your cases, if you have a child or you know of a child learning disabled or developmentally disabled, please provide extra protection, extra cognitive aspects. Be cognizant of their own behavior and expressions. It's crucial because they get pregnant many times. Pictures are taken and sold, and the parents just don't know what to do. Parents abuse those kids too. And those kids, sometimes when they sleep with you, they start fondling your body because they're just wanting to find out. And it is a different ball game altogether. When it comes to a child who is compromised in their development, you must seek specialist information.
Last question on consent. I think a lot of people don't understand what is actually consent. So how do we talk to our children about consent?
Okay, legal aspects I've said, as long as the girl is below 16, you know, whether it's consensual or not, there's no issue on consent at all. It will differ in terms of punishment. You know, if it's in a consensual relationship, meaning to say the boy is 14, the girl is also 14, and it is proven in court that it was consensual, then the punishment may not be mandatory jail of 5 years and can be something lesser. But that's just about it. But then if it's 16 and above, then it's the same as adults already. That's why we need to educate our boys and girls that even if they're in their relationship, it's a complete no-no. I know abstinence is very, very hard, but at least, you know, to know the law is a form of prevention as well. I think it's very important to empower ourselves with what the legal standards are. But with regards to, you know, psychological consent.
Psychological consent can only be given, if you can be 23, you can be 30, anytime, you can be married even, but you're still giving consent. Giving consent psychologically must involve an understanding, a thorough understanding of the consequences of your action. Your participatory action, your collaborative action with someone else, sexually or otherwise, understanding the possible consequences, that's when you can actually say, I gave consent. Because halfway through something, you can withdraw your consent. You can say, actually, I want to stop. I don't want this to go any further. And that should be respected. That's another important functional word that comes with the word consent.
And I think a part of sexuality education is also to respect your body. That's a very important aspect that we need to empower children, that we need to respect our bodies. You can only impress on that on your children if you have a relationship.
Thank you very much. Would you like to leave us with a message, Farah?
Again, I cannot stress this enough. Please be your children's best friend because you are the best protector for your children. You know, I'm seeing, inside Azmi and myself and Paul, I'm sure, are seeing scary things every day, every single day, you know, and it's getting scarier. And, you know, sincerely, I feel that it's the parents who can actually provide the frontal protection before, you know, your children embark outside. And of course, if you cannot do it yourself, for example, if you find it so difficult to talk, then that's why it's important to have close extended family. You know, we may not be able to do everything, but that's why, you know, during our mother's time when they were growing up and all that, we used to be closer, isn't it, to our extended family. I think we need to bring that back. Have very, very strong family units. And whatever happens, support your children. Never turn them away.
Paul?
If you have the intent and the motivation to want to make a difference in your children's sexual life, then you must act now. It's never too early and it's never going to be too late either. Please plug your knowledge gaps. Don't be afraid of doing that with a professional, but you must have the intent and the motivation too. There's so many grandparents I saw here, and those grandparents are here for their grandchildren's sake, for the sake of being mentors to their children. And I can only encapsulate this in one phrase, ancora imparo, which means I am always learning. The fact that you all are here the whole day, you are really great. You are here to make a difference in your children's lives. So don't forget to always start learning.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul J. and Dr. Farah Nini, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.